The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliate stations coast to coast present
Baseball, Beer, and Barbecue.
The 0-2 swing and a miss, strike three, blew it past it.
Discussing baseball, good drinks, and food.
And you got your honey mustard?
I love mustard.
With Ted Hicks and Lee Vowell.
Well, big deal. I am very professional.
On the Happy Hour Network.
And welcome to Baseball, Beer, and Barbecue with Ted Hicks and myself, Lee Vowell. Like us on Facebook, follow us on the Twitter at BaseballBeerBBQ, and read us on our blog site, BaseballBeerBBQ.com, where seldom we write, but you may find some words from us before. Our guest today will be Eric Chesterton. Eric writes for the Philadelphia Phillies site, The Good Fight. Also, we would like to thank NGSC Sports, I-95 Sports Network, Back Sports Page, RF Sports, XRP Radio, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spreaker, actually, for all playing Baseball, Beer, and Barbecue. We're not worthy of you playing us, but we are appreciative that you do so. Also, CJ Computers NC, who we're very happy, retweets us quite a bit. You can find them in Raleigh, North Carolina. If you have any kind of computer issues whatsoever, you definitely should check them out. So before we are joined by our guest, Eric, from The Good Fight, Philadelphia Phillies site, we would like to discuss a little bit about the Dodgers and Mets. The Dodgers and Mets, of course, have won each one their division. The Mets have won the National League East, and the Dodgers have won the National League West. They will play each other as it's scheduled now in the first round of the playoffs, or second round, I guess, if they want to phrase it that way. I do think the Mets have the upper hand over the Dodgers at this point, just because their pitching staff, especially starting pitching staff, is deeper than the Dodgers. The Dodgers have two studs at the top, but Kershaw has yet to prove himself really consistently in the postseason. So I think the Mets have the upper hand there. I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets win 3 of 4, or even maybe sweep the series, depending on how Kershaw and Greinke actually pitch in that series. The Mets at this point look like they are hosting the series. They just have the better record. I would be surprised if the Dodgers overtake them for best record, even though the Mets have lost. They were swept by the Phillies, actually. We probably won't bring that up with Eric, but it's because it's so late in the season. What difference does it really make to the Phillies? But it does make a difference for the Mets, because the Mets need to consistently play well just to have that upper hand over the Dodgers. But it's baseball. Does it really matter who has home field advantage? Really, when it gets to the playoffs, not so much. The Cardinals and Blue Jays both clinched last night, so they're both division winners. Congratulations to Toronto, first time being division winners, I believe, in 21 years. The Rangers should win the AL West. They are 3 games up in the loss column over the Astros at this point. Astros and Angels, even though the Astros are slightly up in the wild card race, they are tied in the loss column. And actually, the Twins are only 1 game back in the wild card in the loss column. So it's going to be a battle the last 3 or 4 days between the Angels, Astros, and Twins to see who makes the playoffs. The Astros have been in the playoff picture all season long. The Angels back and forth, and the Twins kind of just consistently hanging in there, so it'll be interesting. A few things of note. 40 homers seem to be in vogue again. In 2013, we had two players, Chris Davis and Miguel Cabrera, break the 40-homer plateau. Last year, 2014, Nelson Cruz was the only player to do it. This year so far, we have had 8 players. We have Cruz again, of course, Chris Davis, of course, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Josh Donaldson, Nelson Arenado of the Rockies, Carlos Gonzalez of the Rockies. Josh Donaldson, as I mentioned, is also the other teammate of Jose Bautista, who has broken the 40-homer plateau. So this year we actually have had 2 sets of teammates of the Rockies and of the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, Donaldson and Bautista, the Rockies, Gonzalez and Arenado both break the 40-homer plateau. That's the first time it's happened since 2006. That's back in vogue. The A's have hired their first female coach, Justine Siegel, in Major League Baseball. That's the first female coach to be hired. She's the guest instructor for the Instructional League Club. Hopefully she'll continue to be some part of the franchise going forward. It's great to see women in all walks of sports organizations in North America crossing those lines. Justine Siegel, of course, Major League Baseball, we've already seen it happen in NBA and the NFL. Yet to see it really in NHL, even though we've had some players play minor league hockey. So hopefully that'll continue. Siegel, she's 40 years old. She completed a Major League Scouting Bureau school, has her PhD in sport and exercise psychology. Her duties, according to Athletics Assistant General Manager David Forst, will include a little bit of everything, ranging from hitting, infield practice, to offering knowledge and meetings. So it's great to see women making headway into a place they weren't considered maybe equivalent to before, where they certainly are in life, certainly are in sports. So it's great to see. Jonathan Papelbon, of course, didn't use the arm bar against Bryce Harper. Maybe he should have. Papelbon gone now for the season, according to the Nationals. He'll never pitch for Washington again. Bryce Harper, probably the National League MVP. If he comes back this season, it doesn't really matter. The Nationals are out. That's an ugly situation to see. And Anthony Rizzo goes 30-for-30 this year. He's the second player ever, besides Don Baylor, to actually hit 30 or more home runs and also get hit by 30 or more pitches in a season. So I guess congratulations to Anthony Rizzo. He's done an excellent job hitting those home runs, and he's kind of stood at the plate and allowed himself to get hit by 30 or more pitches. So kind of one of those weird baseball issues. 30 for 30 this year, not homers and stolen bases, but homers and getting hit by pitches. Water has been found on Mars, so congratulations, Mars. And Aaron Rodgers is crazy ridiculous. We'll probably get into that just a little bit. But right after this, we're going to be joined by Eric Chesterton of The Good Fight. Eric writes for thegoodfight.com, a Philadelphia Phillies site. It'll be awesome to have him on.
Gosh, you lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygaggers.
We now welcome Eric Chesterton to the show. Eric is a writer at thegoodfight.com. Writes about Phillies, talks about Phillies, discusses Phillies in life and in general. Eric, thanks for being on with us.
Eric, great to have you on the show. As you know, I'm in New York, you're in Philly, and I guess we're not supposed to like each other between the Eagles, Giants, Phillies, Mets, Flyers, Rangers, you name the sport. But I have a question about the Phillies. You know, they didn't really have a great season, but there is hope for the future, right? First of all, like, what do you think about the general manager change, and who do you see as the most likely candidate for the job?
So first off, I'm a little more torn about the Ruben Amaro firing than I think a lot of other people are. I kind of pointed out, I think, a number of times, either on Twitter or on The Good Fight, kind of the merits of what Ruben Amaro has done, at least in the last couple years, in terms of rebuilding the farm system and finding talent within a kind of limited, I'm not sure limited budget's the right word, but kind of limited resources, mostly limited resources because he gave a lot of them away earlier in his tenure to guys like Ryan Howard and Jonathan Papelbon and guys like that. But I think, yeah, the future is bright, I think, for the Phillies. Consensus seems to be when those kind of minor league system rankings come out in the next couple months, the Phillies are going to rank quite favorably at top five, I think, is what a lot of people who know those things are saying. But at the same time, I think, so he did that, but I think it's good that the Phillies are moving on. There was a lot of excitement in Philadelphia when Andy McPhail was introduced as the new team president, because in that press conference, he and Phillies owner John Middleton kind of used what had been something of a dirty word in the Phillies front office. They used the word sabermetrics a lot. And that was something that, at least among the people I interact with on the internet about the Phillies, that was a breath of fresh air. And Ruben Amaro never really kind of adopted that. And even the moves they might have made in the last year or two were really kind of too little too late. And you don't want a general manager who's going to be behind the curve. You want a guy who's going to be kind of out in front of things a little more and being more innovative than just kind of keeping up with the league. As far as candidates go, I'm not really sure. I mean, the Phillies historically have promoted internally. But I think that's all about to change, especially I think the hiring of Andy McPhail kind of signals that. So I'm not terribly familiar with a lot of the candidates out there. A lot of the good ones seem to the Braves just announced that they had promoted their guy to general manager. So I'm really not sure who is going to be named. I know the one thing, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but there's this, the female general manager candidate who always pops up. I think it's Michelle Ng or whatever. Kim Ng. Yeah.
Kim Ng.
And there was a little bit of kind of buzz about her because during a Phillies TV broadcast, Andy McPhail said whoever that general manager is, him or her, or he or her would do X, Y, and Z or whatever. So leaving that door open, I think, excited a lot of people. And I think, I mean, for an organization that's been kind of backwards in a lot of things from, you know, the days of integration up through kind of the rise of analytics, I think that would be a very kind of welcome thing for the Phillies to be kind of out in the front on that. Yeah, that would be cool. And she seems, I mean, she seems, from all I know, as qualified as anyone out there. So that would be, I think, a fun way to go about it if they think she's the right candidate.
Hey, I got to ask you a question that you're going to say, Ted, why are you asking me this?
Sure.
Why did the Phillies wait so long to start rebuilding?
I think it was a little bit – so, I mean, you talk about in analytics circles like sunk cost and stuff a lot. But that's hard to really kind of put into practice when you're in the situation. So I think they saw they have all this money devoted to Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, all these guys who were good players. And, you know, if something broke right, they still have a little left in the tank. Maybe you can make a playoff run. You get in the playoffs, anything can happen. So I think there was a little bit of that, that they really did not – they felt there was that kind of outside chance. And I think it's clear they dragged it on a year or two too far. And I think that was mostly it. There's a lot of kind of – no one really knows how the Phillies have operated, like how much control Ruben Amaro had throughout this process. But I think – kind of consensus came to be in the last year or two, was that David Montgomery, the then owner of the team, was kind of calling the shots, and Amaro was simply executing those shots. So I think part of it was when he kind of left the picture and Pat Gillick took over, you saw that move happen right away. So I think it was kind of the typical kind of same thing's happening with the Tigers right now. That old owner who really wants to win while he's still around and doesn't really want to see a full rebuild through.
Yeah, and Eric, again, I appreciate you being on. I'm a Dodgers fan. We seem to be, at this point, happy to take older Phillies off your hands for whatever reason. You know, if Cliff Lee, maybe there's a late, very late season trade, who knows. But, you know, really, the Phillies have rebuilt their farm system through trades and the draft into one that is top 10 ranked, according to MLB.com anyway. So there's definitely hope for the future for Phillies fans. What players do you think will Phillies fans be cheering for in the next few years at the major league level?
I mean, we're starting to see some of them now. Unfortunately, Michael Franco's season was cut short, although it sounds like he'll be coming back to play in this final series against the Marlins. But he was, while he was playing, performing on the level of any other rookie in baseball, save maybe like Miguel Sano or someone like that. But he was a legitimate all-star candidate. I pushed hard for him as a write-in candidate for the All-Star game, legitimate rookie of the year candidate, that should be exciting. I think the pitching is the area where the Phillies have a lot of depth, and I kind of debate with myself about their pitching prospects, because you have kind of an endless supply of number three type starters, but none of those like guys who could become Clayton Kershaw. So we already saw Aaron Nola, who's come up and pitched very well, Jared Eichhoff, who came up and has pitched. He came over in the Hamels trade and has pitched much better than anyone expected, especially this afternoon. 7 innings, no runs, 10 strikeouts. But I think you'll start seeing, you know, a lot of those guys have come over. Jorge Alfaro hasn't really played. He's played a little bit since coming over, but he's had some ankle issues. So, yeah, I think you'll see a lot of those guys come up. J.P. Crawford, obviously. Can't believe I almost neglected to mention him. He's going to be at or near the top of any top prospect list you see in the next couple months. And he has hit at every level he's been at. I'm not sure what he currently is at, but he's carrying something close to a 1-to-1 strike to walkout ratio as a batter throughout his minor league career, which is just incredible. And he plays shortstop, and there's no indication that he cannot play shortstop, like that he's going to stick there. So that's something very valuable, and, you know, cross your fingers that it keeps kind of going on that trajectory, because he's going to be, I think, if the Phillies do have another good team the next 5 to 10 years, he will be the centerpiece of that.
Yeah, awesome. And you, one pitcher you mentioned was Nola. Of course, he's been – I hate to even bring this up. He's been shut down for the season. Yeah. The Mariners said that with Felix Hernandez. I'm like, there's only 4 games and 3 games left in the season. What does it really matter if you say someone's shut down for the season? But, you know, Aaron Nola, he's been very good, really. In 13 starts, 6-2, 3.59 ERAs, 68 strikeouts, and 77 and a two-thirds inning. How good do you think Nola actually will be over the next 3 to 5 years?
I think the ceiling is – the floor is very high on him. So he's I doubt he's ever going to be kind of winning Cy Young Awards, or really in the conversation for winning Cy Young Awards. But I think it's very likely that he's going to be – something like a number two starter, maybe a number three starter. And he's a very polished pitcher. His control is amazing. It has been since college, at least. And he has three or so slightly above average pitches, which you don't usually see that with a guy who's now...
Yeah, just over a year removed from Tommy John. Yeah, absolutely. Ted, you had a question?
Oh, yeah, so sorry. I had a question, you know, about Cliff Lee. You know, it was a no-brainer to not have his option picked up. But as a Philly fan, Eric, how do you feel about Cliff Lee's years with the team, including that massive contract?
With Cliff Lee's years, I kind of wish there were more of them. He was, for me, one of the – I mean, even thinking about Cole Hamels and Roy Halladay and all the great pitchers, Roy Oswalt, that we Phillies fans got to see – over the last couple of years, Cliff Lee was my favorite to watch. Just because I really enjoyed watching how he never really kind of overpowered anyone. He just was so perfect with his control and worked quickly and seemed to know exactly what he was doing. And it was just not flashy, not spectacular, but the results were spectacular. He was my favorite pitcher to watch just because the game moved quickly, and he made it look effortless.
Obviously, the 2015 Phillies are a team that's, and I mean no offense by this, because they're a team that's trying not to lose 100 games, and I like that a team is still battling and not trying to lose that many games, and they swept the Mets recently. So what positives are you going to take from this season?
So a big one that we haven't talked about yet is, a controversial one, is the manager. Pete McCannon took over for Ryan Sandberg when he kind of suddenly quit in the middle of the season. And he's since just recently been extended through next year with an option for the following year. And he's been amazing. And like you said, the team, despite being kind of on the precipice of losing 100 games, is still fighting and still playing hard. And I think a lot of that is to him. The atmosphere seems to have been a lot looser there. There are anecdotes about how he's committed himself to learning Spanish because there's so many Hispanic players on the Phillies team, so he's able to communicate on at least a basic level with everyone on the team. And I think that's kind of a minor thing, but it goes a long way, and I think it's important that he values that kind of thing. So that's one. And two, I would say, I did not think I would say this even 2 months ago, really, was Odubel Herrera, the guy the Phillies picked in the Rule 5 draft back in December or January or whatever it is. He kind of came out of the Rangers system as a guy everyone thought was just going to be sort of a utility player, didn't really have a position, wasn't able to hit really at the major league level, but be competent enough all around that he would make some rosters. But he's kind of blossomed into a real part of the Phillies' future as a center fielder. And that really, I think, has taken everyone maybe outside the Phillies as a surprise, and that's been fun to see as well.
You mentioned the farm system. We've talked about the farm system. You took some positives of Phillies from 2015 that may have been unexpected contributors. How soon do you think Philadelphia should be a playoff contender once again?
I think playoff contender, you can start thinking maybe if things break right. I mean, and a lot depends on what they do in free agency, but I would think not next year, but the year after. So 2017, maybe as a playoff contender year. Again, going back to that Andy McPhail opening press conference, one of the Phillies owners, John Middleton, was there, and he kind of mentioned that he would, and he's a kind of cigar magnate. He has a lot of money from that, and he said he's willing to devote whatever resources are needed to make the team good. So there are a lot of kind of pipe dream scenarios being listed on Twitter with, like, David Price and Jason Hayward and Matt Wieters and stuff like that. But, like, you know, over the next 2 years with the guys the Phillies currently have kind of developing, coming up, you add a couple of those high-priced guys around that either this year or next year, and you might have a playoff contender in as soon as 2017. I doubt a World Series contender unless they go crazy or guys develop into more than it looks like they currently will. But I think playoffs 2017 is in the cards, certainly.
Yeah, and it's, you know, baseball. You get in at this point, just like the Giants last year, the Royals last year. If you get into the playoffs, you have a chance. So it'll be interesting to see. And you mentioned these cigars. I mean, maybe he just gets a bunch of Cubans. Right? So, you know, what I want to do is end this question with end this interview with a non-Phillies question, ask you one question about the Eagles, because they're an interesting team, even if you're not an Eagles fan, just from observing. And I'm a Seahawks fan, and I know you follow the Eagles. And then I really want to ask you, you know, where people can find your writings, because they're really, really good. I read them, and I think you're excellent at what you do, and then let people know where you can be found on Twitter and so on and so forth. But what do you think about the job that Chip Kelly is actually doing with the Eagles?
So I want to preface this by saying I am like an Eagles fan, but I don't follow them closely. I don't get terribly emotionally invested in them, but my fiance does. It's really kind of scary. She is probably the most even keeled, kind of laid back person I've ever met. But just for example, 2 weeks ago against the Cowboys, she was literally throwing like our yoga mat across our apartment during that game because of how it was going. And I talked to her a lot about, I kind of joke with her about Chip Kelly. You know, I'm just a little, I'm always skeptical in any walk of life when someone is given so much power so early into their tenure. I think I hope that's not the problem with what's happening with the Eagles. Like Chip Kelly, you know, kind of biting off more than he can chew by taking over so many personnel decisions. But, you know, especially looking at the current offensive line, it looks like he might not have really been – that might not be his area of expertise. I mean, because I don't think there's any reasonable doubt after his first 2 years in the league that he can coach and, you know, design an offense and game plan to beat just about anyone. But that doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, you see it in the NBA all the time. It doesn't necessarily mean he has any ability to really evaluate talent the way you need to make decisions like that. And I think that's probably what the Eagles are experiencing right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because you'd think the NFL teams with so many more players, you'd get around that. And you mentioned the NBA, but it really does seem that way with the NBA and Chip Kelly, because even though he coaches an NFL team, he's kind of micromanaged it like an NBA team. Like, these players will fit into this role, and they haven't so far. So it's interesting. Well, I hope for your fiance the season gets better for the Eagles.
Yeah.
but will you let people know where they can find what you write and where you can be found maybe on Twitter?
Sure. So all my baseball writing, Phillies writing, is on thegoodfight.com. It's The Good Fight with a PH. Back when the Phillies were good, there were a number of Phillies blogs out there, and they all did this PH trope that I, you know, sort of find annoying, but that's the site anyway. You mentioned running. I write sporadically at SB Nation's running and track and field site called stridenation.com. And then on Twitter, I can be found at CF_LaRue, CF_LARUE. Yeah.
I noticed that. May I ask you why it's CF_LaRue?
Yeah. So, in college, my last name's Chesterton, and in college, everyone on the track team at Haverford had a nickname, and mine was Chesty LaRue for whatever reason. and then, so I just put C and then the F. You know, stands for F and then LaRue. So yeah, that's what that is.
That's awesome. that's a great answer. All right. Well, thank you, Eric, for bearing with us this evening. Hopefully it's weather related and not some weird internet thing, but, you know, next year when it gets to be baseball season, we'd love to have you on again. You were fantastic. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to be back.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he?
Held it like an egg.
Yeah, and he scrambled the son of a bitch. Look at that, he hit the fucking ball. Gotta get some free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good. God, sucker teed off in that like he knew I was gonna throw a fastball.
He did know.
How?
I told him.
And we're back. Again, thanks to Eric Chesterton of The Good Fight, a Phillies website. He writes about the Phillies. Excellent to have him on. Get his take on not only Phillies, but Chip Kelly and the Eagles as well. So, you know, Ted, we want to close the show with several points. The first thing I want to mention, we talked about a female GM. Oh, my gosh, the craziness that's happening in the world today, right? But the A's have actually hired their first female coach. And the first female coach in Major League Baseball, Justine Siegel. She's a guest instructor for their Instructional League club. She's 40 years old. She's completed the Major League Scouting Bureau School and has a PhD in sport and exercise psychology. Her duties will include a little bit of everything, quote unquote, and that's according to Athletics Assistant General Manager David Frost, ranging from hitting infield practice to offering her knowledge in meetings. What's your take on Justine Siegel becoming the first Major League female coach after, you know, just, I guess it was last year, we had the first NBA female coach.
Not only that, we had though she didn't make the Cardinals, we also had a female football.
Very good point. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, three words. It's about time. Come on. It's about the skill set, Lee. I mean, you and I both know it's about the skill set and it's not about gender. If you got the chops to do it, why not?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you and I are baseball fans our entire lives. You put me in a GM role And I promise you, I will not do any better than if you put Justine Siegel in a GM role. I probably will do much, much worse because she's experienced the game. I'm just an observer of the game. I don't really know what, you know, day in, day out makes a really good Major League Baseball player. And she's going to learn that if she doesn't know it already. I root for her completely. I hope she goes beyond just being a guest instructor for their instructional league. I hope somebody next year or the year after hires her as a full-time coach. I wish her the best because, you know, I don't know how you are. I've lifelong tennis player, right? And I'm a guy, obviously you can tell, hopefully by the sound of my voice, I've played many, many female players. I've had girlfriends that have played tennis and they kick my ass. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, you can observe talent. You can know how, what goes into making a good team or a good individual player when it comes to tennis, for instance. So I wish him the best. I mean, yeah, as you said correctly, it's absolutely time that we have these coaches entering the big four. We don't have an NHL coach, but we have had an NHL goalie, at least in the minor league level. So it's about time that we have females entering the big four in North American sports organizations. I think it's absolutely time. So your take on Jonathan Papelbon, and as I wrote in the outline, not using the Rousey armbar against Harper. Why not go for the armbar? Obviously, it works.
Yeah, it works, but you know what? Number one, you got to respect the game, and this is going to get a little touchy because we don't know what went on in that dugout.
Oh, we know what went on. Jonathan Papelbon has been an effing asshole since every team he's been on.
Day one, wherever he goes, you know, it's easy to say he's poison, he's a cancer, he's this, you know, and when we use those terms, we kind of think, you know, are we talking about Gary Sheffield? No, we're not. But I think it's the case of a senior guy discussing or not liking the fact that he didn't run out the ball. You know, he didn't run it, you know, he hit it, didn't run it out. Kind of something that Cespedes did a few weeks ago, but I don't think anyone got on him because he was smacking, you know, 20 zillion home runs. But I think it's good for the elder statesmen of the team. You know, there's going to be people that are going to say, oh, well, he's not an everyday player. So what? He's someone that knows the game. And I mean, who's to say that Bryce Harper doesn't require an attitude adjustment? I don't know. I just heard there's so many rumors, reports, and speculations that people on the team were on Papelbon's side or they sided with him. I thought it was kind of funny because you mentioned a few pitchers, you know, King Phil is getting shut down. You know, what's his name was basically shut down for the rest of the season. Papelbon. He's like, he's done. The Phillies have removed his jerseys from the MLB stores online and brick and mortar locations. It's over. It's over. You touched our franchise player and that's that. But I don't know who's to say it wasn't deserving. He wasn't deserving to get his bell rung.
Yeah. Oh, and then you get into the point of Papelbon is not, he's not old, but he's not young. He's not as old as we are, but he's not a young player either. And Harper's, he's just a kid. I mean, really, he's still just a kid. And even though he's put up huge numbers this year, we don't know what his attitude is like. We're not in that dugout every day. And Papelbon, you know, he was with the Red Sox, then he was with the Phillies, now he's with the Nationals. People don't seem to want to keep him around for whatever reason. And you hear good things and bad things as far as his pitching productivity, but bad things as far as, the guy's just kind of weird. And he's not an everyday player. The problem is he's a relief pitcher and he's a specialized relief pitcher. So he's probably in the dugout more than almost any other player because players are out there in the field playing. So you don't know what the dichotomy is there between Harper and Papelbon or Papelbon between the rest of the team. That team's a mess. I mean, the Nationals are a mess.
I got to jump in there and say, does Matt Williams get a karate chop to his throat for then allowing pushing Papelbon out there to pitch and he loses the game? You know, I think
Matt Williams will not have a job. It has nothing to do with this instance. The team you give him and the team that he put out there on the field and how he got them to be out there on the field for whatever reason. The Nationals, everybody had them picked to win the NL East.
I know.
They didn't produce, but Matt Williams is a big, he's a big detriment to them being productive. So yeah, he won't have a job next year anyway.
How about 2 years ago? Let's rewind the clock a little bit. Lee, how about 2 years ago when the Cal Ripken and the Nationals ownership were courting? And I think it came down to, it's like you're there at the big dance and you look and you say, hey, she could be my future wife. Let me go out and ask her, would she like to dance? that was the problem. From what I heard a few years ago, Ripken was waiting to be offered the job. It never happened. And he stayed with TNT and TBS with Turner Sports. I think without a doubt, he's going to be the next Nationals owner. I mean, not owner. Well, hell, they might even offer him part ownership. But his name in the DMV area, it's can't lose. And my last thought of it would be definitely for the Nationals. He can never be the Orioles manager.
Yeah, and speaking of DMV at demilitarized zone, a guy who should be a manager or at least a coach in Major League Baseball is Julio Franco. I mean, this guy has produced for so many years, obviously knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Spent time in Korea, now he's like a manager in Japan, but it's like a very a minor league team. Why is Seriously, I have no idea. The guy is in his mid-50s. He knows how to play the game. He's smart about the way you play the game. But he's stuck in Japan somewhere, not even Major League. Why is this guy, when we're hiring nowadays, Matt Williams, for instance, a guy who was an everyday player in Major League Baseball, Franco should be he should have a managerial job in the Major League Baseball, right? Why would you not hire Julio Franco at this point?
I don't have the slightest idea. I think after the show, we're going to get on the phone with the front office of the San Diego Padres, and we're going to speak to Omar Minaya, and he's going to get that man a job. There's got to be something.
It's funny because the guy has produced Franco, has produced at a managerial level, like at different places. Like, it's not just hitting. Like, the pitching staff has performed better. It's like, the guy knows how to play the game. He deserves a managerial job. And I don't know if it's because, and I'll say it because it's baseball, beer, and barbecue. We can say what the hell we want to. It could be because, one, he's black, or two, he's Hispanic speaking. I don't get it. I mean, Ozzie Guillen was a good manager, and now he doesn't have a managerial job, right?
No.
Why is that? It doesn't make any sense. But Matt Williams, a balding white guy, this guy can have a job. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. Julio, if you're listening, Major League Baseball, hire Julio Franco, at least as a coach, because why would you not?
Something.
He spent 25 years in Major League Baseball. Does he not know what he's doing?
Of course you know what he's doing. This guy was like almost 50 years old, and he was playing with the Mets and still up there hitting. And
because he knew how to hit. He knew what he was supposed to do. Exactly. It's crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
Totally.
Last thing we want to end with on the show, besides hiring Julio Franco, is Anthony Rizzo. He is now a 30-30 guy, the second in Major League history. Have you heard about this? Not only Anthony Rizzo hit 30 or more homers, he's also been hit by 30 or more pitches this season, the second guy since Don Baylor to do that. Oh, I mean, what do you take from that? Rizzo is standing too close to the plate? Don't
back
pitch him
up.
Inside.
Back up.
Exactly. It's all his fault. It's like, yeah, dude, I should have done this, but as far as Fangraphs or something, they should have the way he hits on the outside pitches, because it's like he's got 30 home runs, at least 30 home runs at this point. It's all inside pitches. Back up. You know what? I bet he would still hit 30 home runs a season and get hit less than 30 times if Julio Franco was his manager. That's
exactly.
All I'm saying.
If Julio Franco was his manager, he would still get hit. I mean, he would still hit 30 home runs, but he would probably get hit 40 times. Hey,
so go ahead.
I know we're getting ready to close the show, but we do have to talk about Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL.
Is he amazing?
You know what? You can say this to pay. I'm a Seahawks fan. Do I love Russell Wilson? Yes, absolutely. He's even won a Super Bowl. Would I rather have Aaron Rodgers?
Of course.
And if you talk to a Patriots fan, it's like, oh, I'd rather have Aaron Rodgers is a freaking athletic, ridiculous guy. I mean, if you put Aaron Rodgers on the same teams, and I'll say this, same teams that Tom Brady doesn't have two Super Bowl losses. Aaron Rodgers has beaten the Giants twice, and you guys have six Super Bowl rings. Aaron Rodgers is a freaking beast. He's ridiculous.
He is.
Especially at home. Has he not thrown, like, over his last 43 games at home? He's thrown, like, 50-plus and zero interceptions. Ridiculous.
I got to tell you this last week's game, because in one of the multiple fantasy leagues I'm in, I was down, I think, 50 points, and I had, what's his name, Cobb and Aaron Rodgers. And I was like, oh, this is a win. Before the game even started, I was like, this is a win. I know.
The guy's a freak. I mean, he's a freak. Because it's not only, the thing about Aaron Rodgers, not only does he have incredible touch, incredible arm strength. And I say this as a Seahawks fan because I've seen him play the Seahawks several times now. And they should have beat the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game last year. It wasn't his fault they lost. Is the fact that that guy, he has a mind for football that's slightly less than Peyton Manning. He knows exactly what he needs to do.
Yes.
And it's almost like at this point, he lost Jordy Nelson. They're 3-0, right? I mean, the guy's going to be incredibly talented. He's going to have an incredibly successful season. But it's a matter of he knows where the ball needs to go. He knows how he needs to throw it. I won't say what Jim Rome actually today said. He was the most talented quarterback in the history of the game. I won't say that. I won't say he's not that. But he's not that just because he's only got the one Super Bowl. But that's not – it's a team sport. It's not his fault. The guy is crazy. He's crazy good. I mean, if anybody were to try to make the argument at this point in this game in 2015 that Aaron Rodgers is not the guy you would have as your starting quarterback in the NFL, then you're just you're such a homer. It's ridiculous. Your argument would be invalid. How good would the Jets be if Aaron Rodgers were the quarterback?
Oh, my God. Please don't even start. I had an argument today that I would take Jay Cutler right now as a quarterback with all those weapons around. But if you throw Aaron Rodgers in the middle of this, they're going straight to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, because they are. And they're the AFC East favorite if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of the Jets.
Right. Because he's going to make everyone better, because he's going to pinpoint his passes, and you know everyone's going to have 1,000 yards receiving. The running game will step it up a notch because you don't know what this guy does. He's that darn good. But it also says something to the fact that you see what happens when some of these guys sit on the bench behind legends versus what a lot of, you know, hey, just draft them and throw them out there for week one. When you sit back and you watch and you learn the game, and then, you know, the game isn't as fast for you. So, I don't know. But Aaron Rodgers is an anomaly.
He is. And he learned behind Brett Favre. And, you know, going back old school, Terry Bradshaw sat for, what, 5 years before he was a starting quarterback?
Right.
But and this is – Darrelle Revis, to me, I love Richard Sherman. He plays a certain system, and I don't think he's had a great season. I think Darrelle Revis is probably the best cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah.
But Darrelle Revis was on the Patriots last year when they played Green Bay. And Rodgers saw that Revis was playing a little bit outside shoulder to Jordy Nelson in their game last year, which the Packers beat the Patriots.
Yep.
And Aaron Rodgers said, Jordy, cut inside because he's playing you outside. and he threw a slant to Jordy Nelson, who took it to the house. Aaron Rodgers picks that up, throws that pass perfectly. Tom Brady doesn't do that. Russell Wilson doesn't do that. Nobody else does that. That's Aaron Rodgers doing that, beating the best cornerback in the NFL. Nobody else does that. Aaron Rodgers is a freaking beast. Without question, he is the best quarterback in the NFL.
You're right. I agree with you. Hey, water on Mars?
Yeah, no, Aaron Rodgers discovered water on Mars as well. It's crazy. It's amazing. He's like, this tastes salty. Oh, what? You know, it's water on Mars. It's dark streaks. This is water. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what comes of that. That's kind of interesting. But actually, I think we should close the show at this point. We actually won't have a show for a couple of weeks, but we have a certain guest from NGSC Sports who may be coming on, Ted, with us, along with Ralph.
That is true. John Duchette will be coming on with us, I think, on the 17th. I think we're going to do it might potentially be a live show on the 17th. I don't know, but we'll see. But really excited about what's happening, what's coming on with the playoffs right around the corner. This is the last weekend of MLB. That's really it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. The Astros are not going to make they're not going to win the division, but they may make the wild card. That's the race that we're looking at this point. The Rangers are probably going to win that division. So, you know, tune in for baseball fans. What Sunday is the last day of the season. It's Thursday. Lots of stuff's going to happen with the AL. It'll be a fun playoff season, absolutely. So, anyway, it's going to be 2 weeks before we have a show, Ted. The series between the Dodgers and the Mets may be over. I just want to wish you, seriously, your team, good luck. If they beat the Dodgers, I hope, as my dad used to say, if your team loses, you want that team that beat them to win the championship because that means you lost to the best. So if the Dodgers lose to the Mets, I hope the Mets win the World Series.
And as you know, I have an L.A. Dodgers baseball cap along with, you know, a billion Mets caps. That's the... Best of luck to the Dodgers, too. I'll be rooting.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great couple of weeks and enjoy baseball and football and everything else we talked about. Thanks.
The fans hoping to catch a little bit of the old-time religion right here, baby. With Junior stepping up to the plate. Here comes the stretch. And the pitch to Junior on the way. Swing and a fly ball into deep right center field. That baby is going to be fly away. The old-time religion lives. Junior does it. A two-run.